Hi, and welcome to WOB Radio. We are today gathered Marilyn, Eric, and Noah, Gordon, and myself, Lynn. The song that we're going to be doing today is from the Little Red Wobbly Songbook, and it's called The Worker's Flag.
The worker's flag is deepest red. It shrouded oft our martyred dead. And ere their limbs grew stiff and cold, their lifeblood dyed its every fold. Then raised the scarlet standard high, beneath its shade will live and die. Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying here. It well recalls the triumphs past, it gives the hope of peace at last. The banner bright, the symbol plain, of human right and human gain. Then raise the scarlet standard high, beneath its shade we'll live and die. Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying here. With heads uncovered swear we all, to bear it onward till we fall. Come dungeons dark or gallows grim, this song shall be our parting hymn. Then raise the scarlet standard high, beneath its shade we'll live and die. Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying here.
And we will now move on to fellow worker Marilyn, who's going to be reading us the preamble of the Constitution of the IWW.
The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, a struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the earth and the machinery of production, and abolish the wage system. We find that the centering of the management of industries into fewer and fewer hands makes the trade unions unable to cope with the ever-growing power of the employing class. The trade unions foster a state of affairs which allows one set of workers to be pitted against another set of workers in the same industry, thereby helping defeat one another in wage wars. Moreover, the trade unions aid the employing class to mislead the workers into the belief that the working class have interests in common with their employers. These conditions can be changed and the interest of the working class upheld only by an organization formed in such a way that all the members in any one industry, or in all industries if necessary, cease work whenever a strike or lockout is on in any department thereof, thus making an injury to one an injury to all. Instead of the conservative motto, a fair day's wage for a fair day's work, we must inscribe on our banner the revolutionary watchword, abolition of the wage system. It is the historic mission of the working class to do away with capitalism. The army of production must be organized not only for the everyday struggle with capitalists, but also to carry on the production when capitalism shall have been overthrown. By organizing industrially, we are forming the structure of the new society within the shell of the old.
Thank you, fellow worker Marilyn. This is a bit of a new part of our show here, just for introductions. We also want to give a land recognition to the Puyallup people, upon whose lands we reside and work and share a love with our friends and family. The IWW has been very supportive of the land back movement to the indigenous peoples of both this country and all other countries. We are going to go ahead and jump right into labor news. We have a couple of labor news articles today. Well, I do have a brief report I'd like to give, more specifically. IAM District 751, that's International Aerospace Machinists, District 751, has finally concluded their strike with Boeing as of, I believe, more than a month ago now. They got most of the concessions that they had been on strike for. They had been on strike for approximately 7 weeks, and they got most of the concessions that they were looking for from Boeing. So it was a very successful strike. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get their pension program back because they had been in negotiations with Boeing to try and fight for that for the duration of the strike, but unfortunately, Boeing wouldn't budge. So instead, what they got was better compensation for their 401k and a better wage increase over the next 4 years in order to compensate for things like the increasing cost of living and also just because their wages hadn't really been increasing at the rate that they had wanted. So salutations and congratulations to the International Aerospace Machinist District 751 for your successful strike. It was good to see you all on the picket line, and I hope that if such a situation arises again, we in the IWW will walk the picket line with you.
Hear, hear.
Mm-hmm. The other brief labor news article I wanted to talk about, and this is a bit of an interesting development because this concerns a union that I'm a part of through my work. Trump has been nominating members of his cabinet, and we will be talking more about the election further into this episode, but Trump has made a very interesting pick for his Department of Labor secretary. So Trump made a very recent, interesting pick for his Department of Labor secretary, and this is coming from Politico by Lawrence Ukenye and Nick Niedzwiedek. President-elect Donald Trump has tapped Representative Lori Chavez de Remer, a Republican from Oregon, to serve as labor secretary, a move that could bolster his credentials amongst organized labor after he made inroads with working class voters in his victory over Vice President Kamala Harris. Chavez de Remer, 56, is also the second Hispanic person that Trump has designated for his cabinet, joining Senator Marco Rubio from Florida. The former president drew strong support from Latino voters in this year's election, cutting into the Democrats' historic advantage. Continuing further into the article, several major unions in Oregon endorsed Chavez de Remer's election bid this year, but she lost to Democratic State Representative Janelle Bynum in one of the most competitive House races this cycle. The Oregon AFL-CIO endorsed Bynum, but Chavez de Remer had the support of several individual unions in the state. Continuing further into the article, in the House, Chavez de Remer served on the Education and the Workforce Committee and was one of just three House Republicans to sponsor the Democratic-backed PRO Act this Congress, which would make it easier for employees to unionize, among other pro-labor provisions. She also co-sponsored legislation that would lower barriers for public safety workers to collectively bargain. So in summary, she's a Republican from Oregon. She has been very pro-labor, and Trump is obviously using this to his advantage to try and win over unions after the election. She has been very vocally pro-labor, and she has done some legitimate good. But as we'll talk about further into the radio show about the recent election that took place on November 6th, I think that this is kind of an interesting situation for, interesting to say the least, situation for organized labor to be in right now, considering how conservative and frankly reactionary the new administration is going to be. Let's go ahead and actually talk about the election, because our roundtable discussion today was basically to focus on the recent election on November 6th. As many of us saw and many of us were greatly disappointed by, the Republicans had a huge sweeping win this election cycle. They have majority in the House, they have majority in the Senate, and they also have the executive office. And I don't think I really need to restate the reasons for why this political situation is going to be heinously bad for a lot of people. The very reactionary rhetoric of the Republican Party towards virtually every single marginalized community in this country, not to mention the fact that lots of his staff picks are incredibly wealthy people, incredibly business-interested people.
Oh, come on, Noah. He's putting the foxes in it. In the hen house.
Yes.
Each one that he places is a fox in that particular hen house.
Mm-hmm. I mean, It also makes me think of the whole Department of Government Efficiency thing that's going to be led by none other than Elon Musk.
Doge.
And Vivek Rajaswami. Yeah, Doge. The Doge Department. This is a very concerning situation. And after a... You know, I've been seeing a lot of people grieve this situation on social media, and I've seen a lot more posts from well-minded people saying, oh, we need to, you know, organize, we need to get involved in community organizing, or, you know, go sign up and help out with the DSA. And this is all good. But I think something that I would also like to remind our listeners is that labor organizing is also something that's effectively powerful in situations like this. Unions have done good work even during conservative and reactionary, what's the word I'm looking for? Administrations.
Fascist administrations?
Yes. Unions are very good anti-fascist organizations.
Yeah, I mean, let's just call it what it is today. Mm-hmm. I wanted to share something because what you said is true, but I think in addition to the union organizing, which we will talk about, we have to acknowledge that there's more than one way to go about this, to fighting back and resisting. And I wanted to start with a quote by Rebecca Solnit. And the listener may know who she is. She is a very good socialist. This particular quote was written more than 10 years ago, so please keep that in mind. They want you to feel powerless and to surrender and to let them trample everything. And you're not going to let them. You are not giving up, and neither am I. The fact that we cannot save everything does not mean that we cannot save anything. And everything we can save is worth saving. You may need to grieve or scream or take time off, but you have a role no matter what. And right now, good friends and good principles are worth gathering in. Remember what you love. Remember what loves you. Remember in this tide of hate what love is. The pain you feel is because of what you love. The Wobblies used to say, don't mourn, organize. But you can do both at once. And you don't have to organize right away in this moment of furious mourning. You can be heartbroken or furious or both at once. You can scream in your car or on a cliff. You can also get up tomorrow and water the flower pots and call someone who's upset and check your equipment for going forward. A lot of us are going to come under direct attack, and a lot of us are going to resist by building solidarity and sanctuary. Gather up your resources, the metaphysical ones that are heart and soul in care, as well as the practical ones. People kept the faith in the dictatorships of South America in the 1970s and 80s. Women are protesting right now in Iran, and people there are writing poetry. There is no alternative to persevering, and that does not require you to feel good. You can keep walking, whether it's sunny or raining. Take care of yourself, and remember that taking care of something else is an important part of taking care of yourself, because you are interwoven with the 10 trillion things in this single garment of destiny that has been stained and torn, but is still being woven and mended.
That's really good.
So I think that's a good prelude to this conversation. I wanted to add that.
I think I'm going to have you open up the section with that conversation, with that poem, honestly. That was really nice.
It wasn't a poem, and it was written over 10 years ago. It's good to know that we've been in some precarious places before and that other people have too.
Well, that was in the middle of Obama's presidency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2014.
Well, it may have been over 10 years ago, so yeah.
I liked the part where they mentioned that the Wobblies say, as Joe Hill said, you know, don't mourn, organize.
But you can do both at once.
I like that because I've honestly personally felt that way over the past month. I'm the kind of personality that when things get hard and I feel helpless about something, my mom always reminds me whenever I get in this headspace to think of Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers always said to look for the people who help. And so this past month, I have been delving a little bit deeper into the kind of work that I want to do within the union. For the listener out there, I'm the branch secretary of the Tacoma General Membership Branch of the IWW. And so, you know, I've been really looking at the kinds of ways that our union can get more involved with other like-minded community organizations, with showing up publicly, whether that's protesting or doing informational pickets or, you know, having some kind of city hall meeting with other local labor unions about the current administration that's about to come in. I've been really thinking about what we can do. And I think that the only thing that staves off my mourning and my disappointment is this union is the way, this one way that I can change the world for other people. And I would like to make that advice to the listeners out there that once the wave of mourning passes you and you feel like you're agitated enough to do something, find the one thing that you can contribute to consistently and just keep moving forward. Do whatever you can. Don't let it overwhelm you. Just do what you can. Yes, fellow worker Gordon?
To amplify on that a little bit, fellow worker, is that we like to stress that we're a labor union, and we like to stress that part of our belief system is that organizing workplaces, organizing on the job is the key to, you know, creating a liberatory environment for the working class. However, we have also come to realize over the years since our founding that there are other organizations that are doing righteous work.
That's right.
That can use our support, that can use our help. Other unions, we can show up at their pickets. Community organizations, we can show up at some of their activities. And we don't have to exclusively be narrowly and parochially involved in just workplace organizing.
Mutual aid counts.
Exactly. That's part of the essence of our philosophy, yeah. Is mutual aid. And so what I'm getting at is that if you can't walk a picket line, maybe you can, you know, fold leaflets or make signs at a sign-making party for a demonstration or whatever. And you don't have to feel guilty or impotent because you are not out there on the barricades, you know, defeating imperialism. You can be one of the people who just helps the work along.
As somebody once said to me, there's more than one role in a revolution. And I like that you pointed out, you know, you don't have to be on the front lines constantly.
Right.
There's a variety of work out there that you can do to either help your local community, to help out larger, like, national or multinational organizations that are fighting for labor rights, fighting for women's rights, LGBT rights, policing and justice reform or abolition, or protesting for Palestinians. There are so many avenues that are available
all
to people.
All of these struggles are connected.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
When you put your energy into one of them, you're helping out all of the connected movements,
mm-hmm.
because all of these have to have the work done, the recognition, the gathering in of people, and the building of huge solidarity.
Also, don't be afraid of individual acts of kindness and solidarity.
The definition of fascism is approximately that the merging of government and industry is what, and that's what we are getting this incoming administration, and it's really frightening to me. But as we say, we can't give up.
Right. You know, and also fascism promotes the idea of class collaboration, that the working class and the employing class should be in common and right. should work to further each other's aims, specifically that of the employing class and the government.
Also, don't forget, fascism thrives on societal atomization, where people are separated from one another. If we're meant to think of each other as, you know, enemies of the state, or the enemies within, which is, you know, this is frankly fascist language that's being, you know, dredged up. When we turn on each other, famously in Soviet Russia and in Nazi Germany, you know, you had children ratting out their parents for supposedly anti-state activities. And when it gets that deep into a person's head, that's where education is another factor in this. And you'll see the gradual corporate takeover, maybe not so gradual, of education. The bills trying to finance private religious schools with state tax money in Texas and other
places. Well, they're already banning books.
Yeah.
Right. And not to mention the whole for-profit charter school programs that this administration is friendly to as well.
So, we could list a zillion terrible things that are likely to happen or have already started to happen. But the thing is, we cannot afford to feel helpless or hopeless.
Right.
Our job now... And look back to, say, Nazi Germany. Did those parents have to tell their children, we saw it coming and did nothing? We absolutely have an obligation to future generations mm-hmm. to do everything we can. And if we do everything we can, we just might be successful.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add to that to saying that if you feel like you're overwhelmed with the current political situation in this country, with the deterioration of living standards, the deterioration of wages and working conditions. I personally am of the vein that it's okay to feel helpless, but the biggest antidote to feeling helpless or hopeless is doing something,
but,
contributing
to
something.
I know I'm doing a lot of talking now, but I got to. I worked for over 25 years in the mental health business. And I used to tell the people that I worked with, I worked with teenagers a lot, that anger has a purpose. Anger comes with a rush of energy. And that energy is when your rights are being trampled. That energy is to right a wrong. So if you're feeling angry, that's a healthy thing in this situation, this government situation. But use your head. Be careful and effective in the way you use your anger to get something changed and something done. And don't just do it alone. Use community as a sounding board to get back information about whether your idea can be improved on, can be made more effective.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, I think that, you know, collaborating with other organizations, I think, is something that could really be improved on this time around. I know that during the previous Trump administration, even throughout the Biden administration, I think the one thing that I've noticed, both in labor circles and in left-wing circles, is that there is this kind of recognition that working in our own isolated pockets, whether that's labor organizing or community organizing or political organizing, you know, they tend to be somewhat segmented away from each other. And there's been this growing realization of, if we actually all work together as a united popular front,
no more silos.
Exactly. Yes. Especially within the left wing, which is a personal grievance of mine, you know.
Yeah.
I prefer to put myself in the position of, I need to be able to talk to as many people as possible with as many varying different perspectives on action. And that way we can all, whether even if we are doing our own thing, at least we have some kind of synchronicity of, we're working for common purposes.
We're
here.
Very lucky here in Tacoma that we've got the CCG0, or umbrella organization, that stands for Climate Catastrophe Ground Zero. Members of that umbrella organization so far, Black Panthers, La Resistencia, IWW agreed to sponsor it, Veterans for Peace, Physicians for Social Responsibility. There are at least 36 organizations that have signed on to aid CCG0. And one of the functions of that is, if I, for instance, post something about a prison strike, that goes out to all of the listservs of all of those organizations. And it's the most effective way to get that out there and to lend aid and support.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something fabulous in Tacoma. It's the opposite of a silo.
It's an umbrella organizations of a bunch of different organizations coming together.
That's what an umbrella organization is.
Please define.
Just to touch on that point, a silo is specifically when one group of people are banded together, whether ideologically or through a preferred method of action, kind of collect within one particular group, but they don't have a lot of cross collaboration with other organizations. For example, if you had, and this is a hypothetical, say the DSA could be a silo for political organizing, and then over here is the IWW, which is kind of its own organization for labor organizing. If those organizations remain separate, they have a lot less power being separated from each other. For example,
sometimes different groups get jealous of sharing their members with other groups. They think it's going to siphon off the power and effectiveness of their own group.
Mm-hmm.
So they gather people together kind of jealously and try to keep them together instead of letting that cross-fertilization happen, which can be the most effective thing.
That's, you said it better than I could, frankly.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something that I think that for our branch of the IWW, I think we actually do quite well. Our branch members, many of them are dual carders in other unions, and they attend their local meetings, and they try to be involved in those organizations as well. We have people in our branch who are associated with the Tacoma DSA, which also do some good work. They passed the Tenants' Bill of Rights. They're currently working on the Workers' Bill of Rights, which we've just recently voted to endorse in order to expand worker protections and workers' rights here in the Tacoma-Pierce County area. You know, there's, like you said, there's the Black Panthers, there's Climate Change Ground Zero.
There's Climate Alliance for the South Sound. There's 350 Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
There's Native Daily Network. There's Radio Tacoma. Mm-hmm. All of these groups. You got your hand up.
This is not to take away from different groups' expertise in certain fields.
That's right. They're all different.
They can have, I like the expression, you know, many paths, same goal. Which is basically, you know, our goal is humanism. Our goal is an economic system that is just. Our goal is a society that is as free as possible as we can make it from bigotry and prejudice. And people are going to go about that in different ways.
Yeah.
I used to be pretty strident about working with religious groups. I didn't want to have anything to do with religious groups. But I have, over the years, discovered that there are some religious groups that their motivation might be their scripture or their custom, but their goal is the same as my goal, which is justice for the working class, justice for the people. So that kind of, to, you know, amplify on the silo idea, the silo being a long, tall, skinny building filled with one kind of grain, you know, so instead of blending them together, well, that makes sense, but areas of expertise do not equate to differences in ideology.
Instead of a silo of a single grain, I guess you could say we're trying to make a bag of mixed nuts.
That's, you got it, buddy. You got it.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, no, I think that's the real benefit of, especially our branch of the IWW, is that we do have all these strings. We are associated with all these other fights. And even though, as a union, we focus on labor organizing and advancing that mission, we can still volunteer our expertise around labor organizing to help out with things like community organizing.
That's right. Most people in the community are workers of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most workers live in a community of some kind. And a stunning example is this. When I was first becoming re-radicalized from my misspent youth, I went to the WTO demonstrations in Seattle in 1999. And I went with a contingent of machinists. I was a member of the machinist union. And we went there from, you know, Bremerton, Wool, you know, metropolis for, you know, sophistication. But anyway, I was marching alongside, and it was a cliche, but it was also true. Paper mache puppets and people dressed up as sea turtles.
Yeah.
And United Steelworkers and longshore people from the Bay Area. So it was this gathering together. And the goal was we had to defeat the WTO. They were going to, you know, put us all in some kind of, you know, nightmare fascist dystopia. So there literally were sea turtles marching alongside steel workers. And it was very inspirational to me. And that's an example of, you know, having different ideologies coming together for a single purpose.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all the time. Because with the onset of this fascist government, we cannot forget that we still have the climate crisis.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, we have the worker crisis. And, yes, we're going to have economic fallout and hard times. But, meanwhile, the planet is burning.
Yep.
And so we can't forget that part. We have to work on all of those fronts.
Mm-hmm.
And the climate groups are going to be very necessary. And one of the things that I know from my years of working is that artful activism is attractive and gets people to join.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's street theater, whether it's demonstrations, whether it's the art build that I was just involved with yesterday, getting ready for a protest, where people that have artistic abilities and creativity come and help out with that. We used the 350 building because they opened their doors to us, because they're part of the same coalition, the CCG Zero Coalition. So we got to use the building, we got to use some of their materials, we got to look around and see all of the things that they've used in doing demonstrations and pickets and marches. And, you know, whether it's music, whether it's writing songs, during the civil rights movement, the songs were a huge way of solidarity building. We're going to use all of those.
Mm-hmm.
They have to.
I think on the note of artful activism, if you don't feel like you're the kind of person who can walk a picket line or walk a protest
Or both, even if you are.
Yeah, or if you don't really feel like you have the energy to take on a lot of busy work within any organization. I mean, take it from me. It's good to take up some of the busy work, but just make sure you don't overload yourself. But if you don't feel like you can do any of that, and if you don't feel like you have the energy to be able to put out, at the very least, I would highly recommend doing some reading. Read some theory. Read about revolutionaries past and present. Read about, you know, how to be an organizer in your workplace or be an organizer in your community. I think that, you know, one of the best ways you can give yourself the education that you missed out on in life is seeking those sources of education for yourself. And this is something that I've done with labor history. That's how I got roped into this mess with you people.
Yeah.
I went down too many Wikipedia articles, and now I'm the branch secretary of the union.
But to get back to article activism, because I wasn't done.
Oh, sorry.
Emma Goldman said, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of a revolution. This is not going to be a one-day struggle. In order to sustain ourselves, we have to find joy in the work that we're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's another reason why artful activism is important.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not able to march, and you're not able to partake of doing something creative, yes, you can read and study, but I highly recommend doing whatever is on topic that is joyful, because we have to survive this.
As I mentioned a little bit earlier, some people are uncomfortable in groups. Some people are, you know, they're basically retiring types, but they have conscience and they have, you know, beliefs. So one of the main facets of our union organizing strategy is one-on-ones. We get with people one-on-one and we talk with them and what their lives are about. And if we can, individual acts of kindness are not to be slighted. To help a person, even just with something mundane like finding a hot meal or a job referral or anything like that, one-to-one, also works for building solidarity.
I've got good news, and I've got lots of bad news. I do want to tell the listener, and I'll start with this, down at the Northwest Detention Center, I was down there last Sunday for a group cleanup of the premises when I think it was 5 fire trucks pulled up screeching, and we didn't know what was going on. We thought it was a structural fire down there. After all, it is a Superfund cleanup site that they built on. They came in and they ended up leaving, and one person was in an ambulance. I found out later that that person set themselves on fire. Mm-hmm. Please keep those people in your hearts and minds that are forced to be living there in that horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
A member of Climate Alliance and myself went to the Climate and Sustainability Commission meeting a few weeks ago and discovered that it was simply a faux commission. Of the members that were appointed by the city council, in addition to that were 4 staff members that basically put their thumb on the scale and told the Climate Commission people what they could work on and what they could do. So while all of this is happening, the mega warehouse has received the green light, but the Department of Ecology basically fined them $9 million and warned them that they need to have a series of public meetings to determine what they're going to do, what the residents are going to do in terms of air quality to ameliorate the situation with this warehouse going in. So the warehouse is probably going in. Part of the deal that they had to make, Department of Ecology, is when they fined Bridge Industrial the $9 million, they agreed that they couldn't fine them or sue them for anything else unless they were violating their own laws. So if we can keep eyes on the area and find that they are still violating the rules, there is a chance to stop them.
So it's another Potemkin Village commission. It's a phony baloney commission is what you're saying.
Well, down in Lacey. They want to put in another warehouse facility.
More stuff.
And they want to destroy some ancient forest and some heritage trees. And one particular tree that has been from time immemorial, a marker tree for the Salish people down there. And they want to put in a fence and a tiny little green zone. And it looks like unless people can continue to fight, that's going to go through. We're going to have to fight. Nothing is going to be given to us in terms of saving our environment and saving the forest. They pitted, they being the city this time, pitted people who want to do something constructive for homeless people against people that are trying to save the planet. And they gave the go-ahead out in Parkland for a church to bulldoze acres and acres of forest to put up tiny house village. And on the one hand, people need a place to live. But why there? Why that one? It is in my mind, because the city says they have a terrible shortfall, and we've all heard that the state has a shortfall, and we all are nervous about what else Trump will do to punish people that weren't fawning over him. Mm-hmm. So we have a problem in the city. The city has decided, and this is not climate, but it has to be said, to lay off 16 firefighters and close down all of the senior centers.
Wow, really?
They've already started with that.
Yeah.
There's two that I know
but
of.
They, sure but they gave themselves raises and they gave the police raises.
And self-defeating.
The firefighters, including the police, the fire chief, showed up at city council and they were so articulate.
I saw you there.
And they were so good. And in return, one particular city council member lectured them in such a disrespectful and denigrating way. I just could not believe that she did that.
Which one was it? You're going to say? Okay.
Yeah. I could name it, but I think it's better if I keep it general. There is one council member that has shown considerable courage, and that is Olga Diaz. So I'll name her in particular. But this city manager position has got to go. And the new climate commission that they're making has to have legal teeth and backup. So those are two, they're not going to be overnight battles, but the people need to elect the climate commission. They don't need to be appointed. And they need to have power. Unlike the police commission, all they can do is advise. And the city is just throwing more and more and more money at the police. And now they've okayed the ShotSpotter program that's going to cost lives. And it's free for the first 3 years. But after that, it's obscenely expensive. And all it does is create misery. Can't tell a shot from a backfire from a firework. I'll leave you with some good news, because God knows there's too much bad news around. This is from Insider Climate News, and it is a river in Washington State now has enforceable legal rights.
Nice.
This is very, very good news. Voters in the city of Everett chose to grant the Snohomish River watershed rights to exist, regenerate, and flourish as part of a November ballot initiative. So I'll just leave it there. It's right. A wonderful thing.
And now for a brief book report like we do with every episode of WOB Radio. This is fellow worker Noah here. And a book that I've been reading, and I really want to recommend to all of our listeners out there, is about a very prominent and famous IWW organizer by the name of Frank Little. And this book is called Always on Strike, Frank Little and the Western Wobblies by Arnold Steed, and you can get it from Haymarket Books. Just to read off the summary of the book, as it's written on the back, Frank Little is considered by some to be the greatest organizer produced by the U.S. labor movement, and yet precious little has been written about the famous industrial workers of the world agitator. Little was a key leader in the country's first free speech fights, organized a number of mass strikes, and was considered such a threat to corporate interests that he was lynched by company thugs for decry attempts at strike breaking. Police and government officials not only turned a blind eye to his murder, they later used his words and actions to justify a campaign to scapegoat and persecute other members of the IWW. Always on Strike chronicles and critically engages with Little's exploits in hopes of exposing a new generation of radicals to his life, legacy, and politics. And I really recommend this book because it's a great biography, not just of Frank Little and the work that he did, but his impact of the IWW during our big heyday in the 1910s and 20s, shortly before he was lynched. So, big recommendation for this book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fellow worker Gordon, you had an article that you'd also like to share?
Yeah, I would like to talk about what I've noticed lately coming back into vogue. Especially in the IWW, but with unionists in general, are some of the terms that we used back in the day. And the term I want to bring up, which has been fraught in our union, is the word sabotage. Now, when we hear the word, see the word, we have images in our head of, you know, cloaked anarchists, you know, with bombs, you know, blowing up factories and things like that. And during World War II, they... the government used the word specifically to address people working in defense plants, that where it was a real threat that foreign agents could come in and sabotage or mess up the work that was being performed. The reason I'm bringing it up is, like I said, because I've noticed some threads on IWW social media where we're sort of re-glorifying the word sabotage. The late fellow worker Arthur Miller had some very strong opinions about the word, because he rightfully thought that using the word sabotage brings down smoke on the union. It automatically, and nowadays, ridiculous. It's part of an algorithm. You mentioned sabotage on Facebook, and you could be talking about, you know, something very innocently, and you'll get noticed because the algorithm will pick you up. So I want to address the term because it's misunderstood. Sabotage, like I said, you know, it connotes imagery of, you know, people throwing wooden shoes into the gears of the windmill, or just, you know, blowing things up, throwing a monkey wrench into things. And that was kind of glorified in the 70s, too. You'll remember the monkey wrench gang and some of the environmental, anarcho-environmentalists from that time, literally, you know, blowing stuff up, setting fire to SUVs, things like that. Well, the word, actually, it comes from the French, S-A-B-O-T, sabot, which means wooden shoe, and sabotage, of course, means throwing your wooden shoe into the machine to make it stop. And it was a weapon of the Luddites in England in the 18th century. And so I want to bring the word up because it can get casually thrown around, and I want to tell you what it really means. It does not mean destruction or bodily harm. What it means is the typical ways that unionists have of making their demands known to management and to the ownership class is that, especially when you're involved in a speed up. So here we go. This article is written by a fellow worker named, what's his name here? Anyway, it was in These Times magazine. It's written by Sean Richmond, and the article's dated December 5th, 2024.
Could you repeat that? Sorry, the caller got in the way.
Sure. The author is Sean Richmond, S-H-A-U-N, Richmond, and appears in These Times magazine. It's a pretty good socialist magazine out of Madison, Wisconsin, dated December 5th of this year. So he brings up right away an IWW strike that was happening in 1913 in New York City. And the hotel workers went on strike. And what they were doing was basically slow down, work to rule, tactics that we normally employ, and also the use of a spice called asafoetida. Asafoetida appears in Indian cuisine, and it's very, very strong, and it's a powdery form. What they were doing is they were just tossing handfuls into the dining rooms of the hotels so that people would get sick and leave the dining room. But it doesn't hurt anybody. It's like throwing a stink bomb in the place. But Joe Etter, who was a leader of the Lawrence strikes in Massachusetts in textiles, he was involved in this strike of the hotel workers in New York City, and he made a speech which was received by the workers, you know, as a big joke, but it was misconstrued by government and management types as being a direct death threat, okay? And what he said was, you know, you got to be pretty dumb to berate the workers that are serving you your food. Bad things can happen. Ha, ha, ha. Well, they blew it up, and what they did is that they've taken that word, sabotage, and have turned it into a curse. It's very typical. Capitalists steal lots of symbols, lots of sayings, and turn them to their own evil purposes. So we try to avoid the word, and I'm just saying, it's coming back into style. The IWW used it in our framework of the word, not in the capitalist framework of the word, which is just like, oh no, there's a rule against that. You wrote the rules. We got to slow down here a little bit. We got to do all kinds of check. Go ahead.
Right. And I think that the union contextualizes the word sabotage to mean anything from, like you were saying, going on strike, slowing down, working to rule,
mm-hmm.
direct forms of action, which are not only still legally protected in this country to some degree,
right.
Sit down strikes are unfortunately illegal under Taft-Hartley, but there are other forms of direct action you can take to confront your employer about bad wages, hours, and conditions.
Right.
And that's what we mean when we say sabotage. It's the thing all unions do. We just want to bring the word back into vogue and recontextualize it in the right way.
Yeah, but we have to be careful in using language for the general public. Now, as Wobblies or fellow unionists or people on the left, you know, we have our own little code words that we use, not really code, but our own expressions that are given to be understood generally. When speaking to the public, you have to be really, really careful. Because if you say that sabotage word, you say the S word, and you're going to draw instant attention to yourself and to your fellow workers. So just be careful and be circumspect about using words. And the article is very interesting because he does give historical perspective about this hotel worker strike. And he mentions the IWW several times, and Joseph Etter, who was a major labor leader at the time. So I recommend the article in These Times magazine for just the general public and for Wobblies especially to read it and to sort this word out in your head and to figure out when it's appropriate to use and when you should just avoid it. So that's pretty much all I got on this word. I'm noticing things coming back into vogue they've rediscovered all kinds of new tactics, like going on strike. Wow. You know, and what I'm getting at is that the IWW and other progressive labor unions back in the day came up with these tactics to better fight for workers' rights and to better improve their conditions. So it says, the Wobblies aside, sabotage has rarely, if ever, been advocated by union officials, but it used to be practiced a lot more, often by rank or filers. So I'm just letting the rank and file know that there are alternate tactics out there that you can use. Just avoid the language, and everything should be okay.
Thank you for that, fellow worker Gordon. Let's talk about some local events previous and coming up. I'd also appreciate if we could shout out some local organizations that
sure.
other people can get involved in, especially with the incoming reactionary fascist administration in this country. Fellow workers Gordon and Lynn, you were both down at the Centralia event on the 11th, weren't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yes.
Would you like to give a little brief report back about that?
Yeah, fellow worker Lynn and I went down to Centralia, Washington, on November 11th. That's known today as Veterans Day, but it used to be known as Armistice Day, and we know it as Remembrance Day because it was that day where the American Legion, and this is historical fact, the American Legion attacked our Union Hall in Centralia, and through a little bit of bad advice, the Union members inside the hall defended it by using firearms. And so what happened is that a couple of Legionnaires got killed and a couple of Wobblies, several Wobblies got arrested, and one of them was lynched. Our fellow worker, Wesley Everest, was hung off a railroad bridge down there in Centralia. And it was a miserable affair. And so anyway, the American Legion in 1924, only a few years later, put up a monument to the brave soldiers, you know, who were out to fight communism and out to fight those evil IWWs. So it's taken 100 years, but the IWW finally convinced the city government of Centralia. We collected donations, and we've got our own monument. And it's about 15 or 20 feet away from the monument to the soldiers. Well, they were dressed as soldiers, but they were American Legionnaires. And so we had a dedication ceremony when it was installed. And November 11th is the day that Wesley Everest was lynched. And so we had a remembrance. And a handful of us showed up. It was kind of a cold, grim day. But we showed up and we paid homage to Wesley Everest and all the other Wobblies who were incarcerated. And a lot of them were incarcerated for 12 or 15 years. The lawyer for the Wobblies was disbarred and was not able to practice law. And so what I'm getting at is that there's a movement afoot to try to get the Wobblies, who were all framed up, and it was a show trial, really, to get them legally exonerated. In other words, either pardoned or their sentences commutated, or however you put that. But we want the record clear that the Wobblies were incarcerated unjustly, and we want to clear their name.
I also just want to add a quick historical footnote. Actually, they the IWW members in Centralia were advised by Elmer Smith to have firearms on hand in case there was a raid, and they did have legitimate reason to believe that there was a raid.
Yeah.
So they were actually exercising their constitutional rights, ironically.
I know.
And then the government and the legal authorities used that against them in the trial.
Right. We're not supposed to fight back.
Mm.
They broke into the Union Hall.
They attacked it. They were actually marching in a parade for Armistice Day, you know, and these were veterans and American Legionnaires. And when they came in front of the hotel where the Wobblies had their Union Hall, they broke in. They turned and attacked the hall. And as they say in the narrative, shots rang out and chaos ensued. But we have our monument down there, and the monument is a plaque with all the names of the Wobblies and Elmer Smith, the attorney, and it says for defending their Union Hall. And we're calling it's been called the Centralia Massacre, okay? But we corrected that, and now it is known as the Centralia Tragedy, because that's what it was. You know, people got killed, and there was no need for that. But the anti-Wobbly sentiment in 1919 in Centralia, Washington was palpable, very strong.
The Tacoma IWW is assisting other local organizations to take part in the Abolish Prison Slavery Week of Solidarity. There are some upcoming events on December 9th and December 12th. By the time this episode comes out, it will most likely be the December 12th event that I'm inviting people to come to. Join the Tacoma IWW branch in the National Call to Abolish Prison Slavery, led by prisoner-led rights group Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. You can visit jailhouselawyerspeak.com for more information on these upcoming events. Thursday, December 12th at 4 p.m., there's going to be a Northwest Detention Center Car Brigade. So the Northwest Detention Center, which is operated by ICE and GEO Group, which is a for-profit prison company. There's going to be a car brigade out front in solidarity with those who have been rounded up and detained by ICE in that facility, as well as those who have gotten sick and died at that facility. This is in collaboration with Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, and you can find them at jailhouselawyerspeak.com for more information. Many members of our branch are part of a larger organization within the IWW known as the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. And we encourage anyone who has loved ones who are detained, who wants to help them get access to the things that they need behind bars to better their both living and working conditions while they're imprisoned or detained, we highly encourage you to reach out to the IWW. We do a lot of solidarity work, whether it's helping people afford things at commissary or helping people have their legal rights respected while they are doing time. We encourage you to reach out to the Tacoma branch of the IWW if you'd like to learn more. To kind of touch back on our roundtable discussion, though, to close out the episode, are there any other local organizations that we'd like to shout out? for other folks to get involved during this time of crisis.
If your town or city has a chapter of Food Not Bombs, it's a great outfit of mostly young anarchist members, but what they do is direct action. What they do is they feed people who are without homes currently, or destitute or in need. And so if you just enjoy preparing and serving food to people who really appreciate it, contact your Food Not Bombs. There's one in Bremerton in Kitsap County, and there's one in Tacoma. And in Tacoma, they also call themselves, I believe, Serve the People. We were talking earlier about what individuals can do to help the cause. That's one good thing, and it's very simple, and it's always appreciated. And I encourage people to get in touch with those folks.
Just a minor correction on my end. Serve the People is being provided through the Black Panthers Party here in Tacoma, which actually I will give a shout out for that. Serve the People is also another organization similar to Food Not Bombs that's being run through the local Black Panthers Party. Big shout out and big love to them for all the hard work that they do. Serve the People is another local community organization that helps people who are going through dire financial straits or the unhoused get access to things like basic groceries, basic medical care, hot food, and other materials that they need in order to survive. So big recommendation and big shout out to them. I think I'd also like to give a little bit of a plug to the Tacoma Democratic Socialists of America. Many of our IWW branch members here in Tacoma are also members of the local TDSA. They have done a lot of great work with the Tenants' Rights Organization. As a matter of fact, Tacoma Democratic Socialists of America is launching a legal program for tenants and renters to defend their rights. I highly recommend reaching out to the Tacoma Democratic Socialists of America either online or through their Facebook page. You can get a hold of them pretty easily. And if you are a tenant or a renter who is having their rights violated either through the Tenants' Rights Bill that recently passed or on a larger legal scale, they have resources there for you to get help. And as always, to close out the show, if you are interested in organizing your workplace, feel free to reach out to the Industrial Workers of the World. You can sign up online at IWW.org, or you can find the Tacoma branch of the IWW on Facebook or Instagram as well. We are very responsive to direct messages on our profile, whether you're interested in becoming a member or if you're interested in helping out with the work that we do behind the scenes. If you want to organize your workplace, we also have trained organizers as well. We have a very strong philosophical belief that the worker should lead the organizing, and so we give organizer training to all of our membership. We would like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in today. Again, this is WOB Radio. WOB is short for Wobbly, which is what we in the IWW use to refer to our members, because to wobble is a verb, that is to get agitated and take action on the job to organize. Yes.
And IWW is the Industrial Workers of the World.
We would like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. Whether you're tuning in through 101.9 KTAH Radio Tacoma, 95.3 KTQA based out of Hilltop, Tacoma, or if you're tuning in to 94.9 KZAX all the way up in Bellingham, we appreciate your listenership. We also have our own Facebook page specifically for WOB Radio. If you have any article of labor news you'd like for us to report on, any local organizing activity you'd like us to do a shout out and report about, or if you want to set up an interview, either as a member of a local organization who's doing work on behalf of the working class, we're happy to sit down with you and get your story out there. Again, one more time, if you are interested in joining the IWW, you can sign up online at IWW.org, or you can reach out to the Tacoma branch directly through our Facebook or Instagram pages. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe out there on the front lines, on the picket line, or wherever you're organizing, and solidarity.
Solidarity.
And you are currently listening to Radio Tacoma 101.9 FM KTAH. Solidarity.